5 hours was Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. The Uzbek immigrants suspected of plowing a rental truck into pedestrians and cyclists on a New York City bike path, killing 8 and wounding at least a dozen others, was charged Wednesday in federal court with acting on behalf of the militant group Islamic State. The suspect, Saifullah Saipov, remains hospitalized after being shot and wounded by a police officer. He has confessed to planning the Tuesday attack for the past year and said he was inspired by Islamic State videos. Federal authorities also said they have found a second Uzbek man in the case. In Washington, President Donald Trump tweeted late Wednesday that Saipov should be given the death penalty. Earlier, Mr. Trump said he is asking Congress to get rid of the 27-year-old diversity lottery program that allowed the suspect into the country. The program provides a path to U.S. residency to foreigners from countries with low rates of immigration. Mr. Trump has been criticized for politicizing the issue. Liberia's Supreme Court has halted preparations for next week's presidential runoff election between former football star George Weah and Vice President Joseph Boakai as it considers a challenge to the first round held October 10th. Third-place Liberty Party candidate Charles Brumskine has complained of foul play. A court spokesman said the court's action does not annul the results of the first round. Boakai, the ruling Unity Party candidate, earlier accused President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf of interfering in the election. This is VOA News. As expected, the United States voted Wednesday against ending its nearly 60-year-old economic embargo of Cuba at the UN General Assembly. More than 190 countries voted for lifting the embargo. Only Israel sided with the U.S. Washington's no vote contrasts with its abstention last year under the previous Obama administration as it undertook a process of normalizing ties with Havana. Cuba's foreign minister said President Donald Trump is, quote, one more president implementing a policy that means a return to the past. A Saudi coalition airstrike Wednesday struck a crowded marketplace in northern Yemen, killing nearly 30 people. Sana'a is a border region controlled by Iran-backed Houthi rebels. The coalition, which has been repeatedly accused of targeting civilian areas, said it's investigating. Saudi Arabia backs the internationally recognized government of Abu Mansur Hadi. Iraq said negotiations with Kurds to vacate border areas of their semi-autonomous region have failed. A week ago, Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi halted operations that started with a seizure of oil-rich land around the city of Kirkuk held by Kurdish forces. Iraq is threatening to resume those operations. The offensive followed September's Kurdish independence referendum opposed by Baghdad. A suspected Islamist militant attacked and wounded two Tunisian policemen with a knife near the parliament building in the capital Tunis Wednesday. One of the officers was hospitalized. Security in the North African country has improved since three deadly attacks in 2015 near the Bardo Museum, at a beach resort, and against security forces in Tunis, in which dozens were killed. President Trump is expected to announce Thursday his choice of Federal Reserve Governor Jerome Powell as the next chairman of the U.S. Central Bank, replacing Janet Yellen. Meanwhile, bank policymakers meeting Washington Wednesday decided to keep a key interest rate where it is for now. The Fed has raised that rate twice this year. Wall Street, meanwhile, posted modest gains, the benchmark Dow Jones average gaining nearly 60 points to 23,435. And social media giant Facebook announced Wednesday third quarter profits and revenue soared from booming revenue from online ads. In sports, the Houston Astros of the American League defeated the National League champion Los Angeles Dodgers in Game 7 of North American Major League Baseball's World Series late Wednesday. The final score was 5-1. The Astros won their first World Series since being formed in 1962. The Dodgers last won the championship in 1988. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, November 2nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Liberia's Elections Commission will today defend election fraud allegations before the country's Supreme Court.
We just want whatever it is, the court to make the proper decision in line with the law and the constitution of this country. Because the people of Liberia have spoken. 72% of the people of this country decided that they want change, led by the Congress for Democratic Change.
Professor Wilson Tapper is National Campaign Manager for Senator George Weah's Coalition for Democratic Change. More and more Togolese are fleeing political violence in their country and seeking asylum in neighboring Ghana. South Sudan's President Salva Kiir continues his visit to neighboring Sudan today, Thursday, and South Africa's embattled president fights corruption scandals.
Essentially, it is not good enough for the president simply to resign and ride off into the sunset. He needs to be held accountable for his actions, both before he became president and during his term of office as president.
James Self is a member of South Africa's opposition Democratic Alliance Party. Tanzania's main opposition Chadema Party criticizes the government for the arrest of an opposition member of parliament. And a Malawi Kung Fu movie generates online buzz. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. In Liberia, Senator George Weah's Coalition for Democratic Change, the CDC, says it continues to make preparations for the November 7th round of election with incumbent Vice President Joseph Boakai of the ruling United Party. But first, the Supreme Court of Liberia must today, Thursday, decide on the merit of a petition filed by three political parties that the October 10th presidential first round election was marred by fraudulent acts and gross irregularities. Professor Wilson Tapper, National Campaign Manager for Weah CDC, says the CDC believes the Supreme Court will decide the case in line with the laws and constitution of Liberia. He says 72% of Liberians went to the polls on October 10th and decided that they want change in Liberia, led by Congress for Democratic Change.
It's unfortunate that, you know, these kinds of problems will develop, because we have formulated the thought and came to the conclusion that whatever challenges there were in the recent elections did not rise to the level as to adversely impact the results. And so we accepted the results of the elections and we agreed to move forward. Unfortunately, another political grouping decided to go to the court. It's a good thing to go to the court, so we expect the court to act properly in line with the Constitution of Liberia.
But the opposition parties, particularly the Liberty Party of Liberia, joined with the ruling Unity Party and two other parties, are saying that there were violation of the Liberian Constitution as well as election laws of Liberia, fraud and gross irregularities. Are you saying these are not still sufficient?
Well, to make an allegation does not constitute fact. You have to prove that. So we wait for them to adduce the evidence to support their allegations. What we are saying, we acknowledge that there were hiccups in the problem, severe challenges, but these challenges were not sufficient in our view to negate the significant effort that were made to reach this democracy at this level. And that's why we accepted the results. Now, if they are saying these challenges are a little more than that and they are fraud and a less violation of the Constitution and other relevant laws of this republic, I am sure they have the evidence to support the allegation.
So what do you think that these three parties, four parties, I would say, have now bent on this? I mean, do you suspect that maybe they don't want to go to the runoff?
Well, from our view, it is like this, James. We don't know what they are doing, but we think that these people make commitments to outsiders. They make commitment to investors that they have significant support. They assure investors, perhaps, that they were going to win these elections, and it turned out they didn't even reach 12%. So you find them struggling to justify to these people why they failed. So they are looking all over the place, finding reasons to suggest that they were fraud, but I'm sure they will prove it. So for us, we just want whatever it is they could to make the proper decision in line with the law and the constitution of this country. Because the people of Liberia have spoken. 72% of the people of this country decided that they want change, led by the Congress for Democratic Change. That's why we came first in the elections. So we are prepared to go for the people of Liberia to now reaffirm that, in fact, it's the Congress for Democratic Change we need to lead this change. What we don't understand, maybe personally I don't understand, why would a ruling party join an opposition party to oppose the government itself? The government is run by the ruling party. One thing we can say from the coalition, the people of Liberia are determined to make this change, and whatever it takes to make this change in a peaceful manner in line with the law, they will make this change.
What is the CDC looking forward to? A rerun on November 7th, or the possibility the Supreme Court might delay the vote?
We expect elections to be held on November 7th, and we expect the court to decide the issue that has been raised by the three political parties that went to court to clear this matter up so that elections can be held. Two things may happen. One, the Supreme Court may decide, based on the evidence given by these people, which in our view we believe is not there, to suggest that we vacate the decision made by the Liberian people on October 10th that they want to change. If that is the case, then I am sure that evidence will be substantially material to suggest that. If that is not the case, and if the court finds that the evidence is not sufficient to support that decision or to vacate the October 10th decision, then definitely we have to order the November 7th elections to go ahead.
Professor Wilson Tapé is the National Campaign Manager for Senator George Weah's Coalition for Democratic Change. You are speaking with me from the Liberian capital, Monrovia. The United Nations Refugee Agency, UNHCR, says it continues to monitor the influx of asylum seekers fleeing Togo into neighboring Ghana. UNHCR's spokesperson, Romain Desclaus, says around 500 people have arrived at the Ghana border, saying they fled increased activities from Togolese security forces.
We are at the moment in the field and assessing and monitoring the situation.
And when you say in the field, are you in Togo and Ghana or just in Ghana at the border?
In the place at the border in Ghana. So 500 people have been relocated to another town where you have more facilities to host this number of Togolese nationals. Most of the hosting is done by the communities themselves with very little assistance from UNHCR at the moment. However, UNHCR is readying itself to support the national and the local authorities in Ghana to provide further assistance to the Togolese.
Are you guys concerned that there will be an influx of more people? Is that what your information so far leads you to expect, or do you know?
Not at the moment. I mean, so far the numbers we have are of those 513 Togolese who reached Ghana. So we have no information that further would come later on. However, we are obviously monitoring the situation in Togo, and we are linking with our colleagues in Togo so that we are well aware and working with the authorities in all neighboring countries to develop contingency plans.
With a number like 500 people, is it that most of these people are coming from the same town or few towns in Togo?
Indeed, the 513 people who crossed into Ghana come from a very localized area on the other side of the border in Togo, which is why they came by foot. It's a very close by crossing over the border. It's mostly women and elder people, and then some single women as well. And so that's why they came to this part of Ghana. It's a very nearby situation.
With the political unrest in Togo, obviously the protests have been focused in the capital. This is a quite remote region, it seems like. Why are people saying they fled this area?
The people our teams have interviewed have all mentioned an increase into the activity of the security force in that part of their country which they fled. They mentioned security and police forces arresting people. So this is the situation that they live. This is why our teams are on the ground to assess those situations to see whether they are fleeing preemptively of violence or if they are indeed targeted by those security forces, which is why we're in the moment calling them. We're not calling them refugees. We're seeing where they are the ones seeking refuge and seeking asylum. We're also working with the neighboring countries, working in Benin and Burkina Faso, on the development of contingency plans, so that we all prepared to address the situation, because it's not only a question of how many of them are coming, because one person fleeing violence is one too many.
Romain Desclaus is spokesperson for the United Nations Refugee Agency. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Senegal's capital, Dakar. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barton, Washington. Today is Thursday, November 2nd. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. Recent developments in corruption cases against South African President Jacob Zuma make it increasingly possible that his party, the African National Congress, will ask him to step down before the end of this term. However, Mr. Zuma continues to fight for his political life. Viewer's Anita Powell has the story from Johannesburg.
The many twists and turns in the ongoing, seemingly never-ending corruption scandals plaguing President Jacob Zuma are too long and complicated to summarize, says David Lewis, executive director of Corruption Watch. Highlights include a recent court ruling that 783 charges of corruption against Zuma, once dismissed by prosecutors, can be reinstated. He's also accused of allowing a wealthy Indian family, the Guptas, to choose ministers and otherwise wield extraordinary influence in his government. Lewis, who heads South Africa-based monitoring group, says he is concerned about where this saga has left the country after 8 years under Zuma.
One of the most critical impact of the whole saga, the whole state capture saga, is the extent to which key institutions have been damaged and the extent to which people loyal to the president and have been appointed to head critical state institutions, from the National Prosecuting Authority to major state-owned enterprises to South African Revenue Services to many of the police agencies.
The scandals and Zuma's low popularity have raised speculation that the ruling African National Congress Party, at its meeting in December, could push Zuma to resign in order to spare the party in the 2019 elections. But Zuma is not going down without a fight. This week, he asked the nation's high court to set aside a bombshell report by the Public Protector's Office that said he and the Guptas used the government for their personal enrichment. Zuma said he would instead appoint a commission to look at the details. The opposition Democratic Alliance Party says it will push back against efforts by Zuma to allow anything short of a full judicial inquiry into the influence peddling allegations. James Self, who heads the DA's federal executive, says Zuma's saga will not end after he leaves office, whenever that may be.
Essentially, it is not good enough for the president simply to resign and ride off into the sunset. He needs to be held accountable for his actions, both before he became president and during his term of office as president.
Zuma's spokesman did not answer repeated calls seeking comment from VOA on Wednesday, but Zuma and his office have previously denied all allegations of corruption and said they will continue to fight on. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
South Sudan President Salva Kiir continues his two-day visit to neighboring Sudan today, Thursday. Sudan's Information Minister, Ahmed Bilal, says President Kiir and his counterpart, Omar al-Bashir, are discussing unresolved issues between the two countries, including border disputes, allegations of supporting rebels in each other's country, and oil revenues. Bilal says the civil war in South Sudan will also feature prominently, and he believes Khartoum can play an important role in helping to resolve the conflict.
This is actually the continuation and vitalization of the agreements which have been done before 2 years between the two countries about oil, about borders, about security, about the problems in the south and the suspended matters between the two countries. Everybody is so optimistic that this time the borders will be open, the trade and the movement of the people will be easy. Oil production will increase around about 350,000 a day, which can improve a lot situation in the south. Another thing which a role which can be played by Sudan in the problem in the south and the war. And we are one country, we know each other very well, and we are very much capable of doing that. And I think this will be the main subject of the visit.
Part of the agreement was that Juba, South Sudan, will make some payments to your government for the use of oil export pipeline through your country. Has South Sudan met this requirement, or is this going to be part of the discussion?
Actually, these matters have been agreed upon before. There is no problem about the transportation of the oil from South through Sudan. There is no problem about this. But there will be cooperation between the country, the countries in the development areas of production of oil have been stopped, and it needs rehabilitation. and it needs some expertise. The two countries will cooperate in that matter. And I think this is what the South Sudan needs. The financial situation there is very bad.
Both your government and the South Sudan government have accused each other of supporting rebels from the other side. Has this issue been taken care of?
Yes, this is one of the issues. And now the agreement between the two countries that the free zone, the two countries, 10 miles from the south, 10 miles in the north, and the joint actually troops. And this will be the main guard for the borders. And both sides will be sure that no rebels from other side can come across. The same model which have been done with other countries and successfully with Chad, for example. And this is actually agreed upon. And also the continuation of the support with the South for the rebels there, this will stop. And I think in this matter, Sudan can play a good role with also the rebels, Riek Machar and others, together and to reach the implementation of the agreement of Addis Ababa.
You are part of IGAD. Does your government have the blessing of IGAD to talk directly with the government in Juba?
In fact, actually, of course, they have the blessing of IGAD and also the United States of America as well. And I think after the lifting of the sanctions on Sudan, this is one of the requirements is that Sudan play a role in this. Of course, we can unilaterally do this, and when it comes to the final agreement of these things, this can be endorsed by IGA.
Ahmed Bilal, Sudan's information minister, he was speaking with me from the capital, Khartoum. Tanzania's main opposition Chadema party is criticizing President Magufuli's government for the arrest earlier this week of opposition member of parliament Zito Kabwe for allegedly making seditious comments against the government. Kabwe was released Tuesday after being questioned by police. He had been accused of making false claims about Tanzania's economic growth and also commenting on how to defeat the ruling Chama cha Mapinduzi party. But Frimo Umboy, national chair of the opposition Chadema party, says Kabwe's arrest is one more example of President Magufuli's ongoing crackdown on his opponents, which he said is leading to a shrinking democratic space in Tanzania.
We condemn the arrest of Honorable Zito Kabwe and the charges that have been imposed on him. We think the police and security forces in Tanzania are working under the instruction of the government officials, the ruling party officials, to arrest and actually detain for no apparent reason the opposition politicians when they give comments on the performance of the government. What Honorable Zito said actually took place during the campaign rally in one of the wards which has a by-election in Dar es Salaam for the councillor. And he gave some statistics and information about the ailing economy of the country. As per the opposition, the economy in Tanzania is not performing well as it used to be in the past years. And this has been an issue of great concern to the opposition and everybody really who cares for this country. But the government of the day do not want to hear anybody talking about the economy. They've been cooking data and explaining to the public that the economy is doing very well, while in real sense the economy is shrinking, the democracy is shrinking, and every politician who is now arrested is being charged by sedition charges. And we condemn this, and we wish the international community also to look into this as a crisis in Tanzania.
Mr. Kabwe's speech, which talked about the quality of life in Tanzania, the economy, and how to defeat the ruling party. One would say that that's being provocative to the government, if you talk about how to defeat the government.
That is exactly what the opposition should do. It is absurd for the government to expect Honorable Zito or any of the opposition member of parliament or politician for that matter to go out in public during the campaign rally asking for votes and then to praise the government of the day. It's not the duty or it's not the responsibility of Honorable Zito Kabwe. What we find in Tanzania at this point in time is President Magufuli and his government does not want to be criticized. And whenever any opposition politician criticizes the government, he's arrested the next day. And so the space for democracy in Tanzania is shrinking and you are not allowed to talk the truth anymore.
It seems to me that perhaps Chadema, you're not willing to give President Magufuli's government the credit when he does something right, because he's brought some new companies. I read the other day about mining company coming to Tanzania. Does he deserve a credit for what he's doing?
No. You know, there's no transparency what is happening in Tanzania in real sense. We support foreign direct investment to come into Tanzania at any one time. But again, we believe the country economy, the country needs to be managed by the law. You cannot bulldoze everybody around pretending that you're working for the economy. In real sense, the economy is shrinking. And as a matter of fact, many companies are closing shop in Tanzania. Many people are leaving the country now. But the government does not want to express this. So the things are not doing well in Tanzania. So we cannot praise President Magufuli. And even if he's doing well in trying to fight embezzlement and corruption, we should not allow President Magufuli to treat the country as his own personal property. We need this country to be governed by the Constitution. We need the president to respect the Constitution and the rule of the land. This is all that we are asking him to do. But he wouldn't give space to the opposition. If he's doing so well, why is he afraid of letting the opposition do its job?
This week, a ruling party member of the Chama cha Mapinduzi party, Mr. Nyalandu, quit the ruling party, suggesting that he might want to join the opposition. What do you make of his decision to leave the party?
That is a brilliant and excellent decision that was taken by Honorable Lazaro Nyalandu. And to be honest, if there was enough freedom of speech and freedom of association expression in Tanzania, many, many people would move out of Chama cha Mapinduzi, the ruling party, into the opposition benches.
Fremont Mbowe is national chair of the opposition Chadema Party of Tanzania. You're speaking with me from Dar es Salaam. The country of Malawi may not be what comes to mind when you think of kung fu movies, but four young acrobats in its capital, Lilongwe, are out to change that. The trailer for their first locally produced action flick, The Town Monger, has been generating buzz online and drawn interest from regional cable distributors. The film premiered in Malawi on October 31st. Lamek Masina has the story from Lilongwe.
The buzz started soon after the director posted the film's trailer online.
It's not what we expected, and we've been overwhelmed by the response. And we have taken, I think, some time now just to sit down and trying to re-strategize, like, okay, where do we go from now?
Ufewa Acrobatics is a group of four school dropouts from the Area 36 township in Malawi's capital. The acrobats are self-taught. They learned by watching Jackie Chan movies and videos of Cirque du Soleil.
At first, we were performing around our neighborhood. After the positive response, we started performing in townships, performing in the streets. In the process, people would give us money for each performance.
Making their own movie seemed a natural progression. In 2015, they embarked on The Town Monger. The film tells the story of the challenges they have faced.
We have sometimes been accused by many people, even by our own relatives, that what we are doing has no future. But I could not back down because I had a vision. And moreover, there are skills which God blessed me with.
The 82-minute movie was filmed using a board camera and a board iPad. The set was the streets they know well. The action movie got mixed reviews at its first local screening to journalists.
What has impressed me the most is the setting, as in at the beginning when the movie was being set, it wasn't just linear.
It never had a lot of dialogue that they can really grow on. It never had a lot of female actors. We only saw one female actor that we can also definitely grow on.
Meanwhile, several regional TV networks have expressed interest in buying rights to the film.
That's correspondent Lamek Masina in Malawi's capital, Lilongwe. And that's it for this Thursday, November 2nd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook. I'm James Botte in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very, very good Thursday.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. on the internet. You can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.